You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who live, work, and minister in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God is doing there. I'm your host, Joe Epley, and as I mentioned in our last kind of short episode to kick off the fall, we are going to be changing the format a little bit, and instead of doing a weekly podcast necessarily, we're going to be releasing about two episodes a month. One of them will follow our traditional interview format, kind of do an in-depth conversation with a rural practitioner, and the other one will kind of highlight a resource, whether it's a book or an article or just a certain teaching on rural that we really think can begin to fill in the gaps. You know, if you look back across the spectrum of this podcast so far, we are over 100 episodes in, and we have covered a lot of ground. And what I'm hoping to do is to see us just kind of fill in the cracks of what we've already covered, to say what is really standing out even above what we've already talked about. And so today is going to be focused more on a resource, really a conversation about church revitalization that comes from a book entitled Fresh Expressions of the Rural Church. It's by two authors, Michael Adam Beck and Tyler Kleeberger. It came out, it looks like, in 2022. And so it's actually a pretty fresh work, ironically, fresh expressions, fresh work. And the link to the book will be in the show notes, of course. But as we dive into it, I just want to look at the structure of the book, first of all. Something you should notice is that if you pick up this book, what I really like about it and what I really admire about it is that, number one, whenever I pick up a resource, I want to make sure it's credible. I want to make sure it's going to be solid. And two things about this book give me great hope. The first is a couple of quotes that happen in the opening chapters. The first one says, "In many ways, the rural church captures a core essence of the church's mission, to be the guiding hand to the life of a place." And I really love that this book starts off with a strong why of rural ministry. It understands the rural church's unique place in small town life. Instead of just talking about technical roles and skills and things you need to put on church, it understands what a rural church could and should be in a society. The second quote is my favorite. It talks about rural church as a place where we have to have eyes wide open, right? Still in the introduction of this book, they use this quote, "While the trajectory of this narrative referring to the rural church narrative, is beautiful, it is not pure." And they talk about kind of these struggles of rural America, the times that rural America has a tough history, you know, when you look at the expansion and the rise and fall of different civilizations even within it. And so, number one, I think this book gives me great hope because it has eyes wide open to what rural is. And that has value to me because, again, I always like to know that somebody actually understands what it is we're dealing with when we say, you know, we're in the rural church. The second thing that I really love is at the end of each chapter, there's this kind of a field manual thing, right? And so what they do is it's a very practical book. And again, this book is not long. I mean, I'm skimming through it right now. And honestly, you're looking at like 130 pages. This is a very accessible book. It's something that you could utilize for a church or a group of leaders. But it has two things in it. It has field exercises. They're kind of questions and exercises where you as a church leadership team could go through these exercises to learn more about how to revitalize and breathe new life into your church. And then it also has stories. You know, we value stories on this podcast. That's why we've predominantly been an interview-driven podcast. But they have field stories, exercises where we have interviews and practitioners and thought leaders of rural ministry. So there's a chance to not only learn from one author's perspective, but to really hear the stories and be encouraged by actual rural practitioners. And so diving into this book, really what I would say is it's kind of a book about revitalization, right? This act of taking something old and breathing new life into it. This structure within rural, right, this idea that there are churches out there that are old that need to be revitalized, this is a story repeated hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times in rural contexts. In fact, some would say that the majority often of rural churches, there are some very vibrant ones, please don't get me wrong, but if you're coming into a rural situation, there's a high chance that you're going to need to revitalize, breathe new life into a local expression of church. And so really, as we kind of go through this book, I've kind of earmarked all the pages I like and the quotes I like, just trying to hit different content. But I want you to get the overall tone of this book is to talk about revitalization. So first of all, starting off with this quote, right? The author says, "I realized then that the places called nowhere with people called no one," again, kind of highlighting that nature of rural to be overlooked, "were not only falsely described to me, but actually contained a necessary ingredient for future possibility, complete desperation." And he talks about being a 24-year-old lead pastor, and he says that he came into rural looking at this overlooked place, understanding that there was a sense of complete desperation. In fact, he goes on to write, "The best method for overcoming resistance is to have no other choice." I really enjoy the bluntness of that. I think it's honest and to the point. But truthfully, I resonate deeply with this. I think that sometimes rural can be viewed as a place of stuck in the mud. And I think if you're a rural pastor or leader, you might even feel that way. You might say, man, my church has been this way for a long time, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to change them. And yet, the nice thing is that rural does exist on kind of a teeter-totter, kind of on the edge of a cliff at times. And sometimes there's a reality that for every time there's resistance given, we can also equally look at a small town church and say, hey, if we don't make changes, we're not really convinced that we're going to make it. And like that environment breeds such ingenuity, such creativity, and is really a breeding ground. And so instead of looking at these kind of contexts as problematic or stuck in the mud, I would encourage you as the rural leader to view them as places of opportunity to say, you know what, whatever resistance we encounter is still within the realm of saying, hey, if we don't change, we might not make it. And I think that people latch on to that when they recognize that the gospel might disappear in some ways in their local expression. And nobody really wants that, you know. But as this book goes on, kind of skipping ahead through these parts that I marked, I really enjoyed where this, really the title of the book comes from. And that's this term, fresh expressions, right? And they go through the history of it a little bit and where that language came from, kind of looking at missions and missiology, which is the study of missions and how we think about that. They talk about fresh expressions of church this way. "A fresh expression is a form of church for our changing culture, established primarily for the benefit of those who are not yet part of any church." And then they go on to list the qualities of these church, right? They're missional, right? They're birthed by the Spirit to reach not yet Christian people. They're contextual. They seek to serve the context they're in an appropriate form for the people in it. They're formational. They're focused on making disciples, not necessarily running a church, but making disciples. And they are ecclesial, right? They are a full expression of the church, not a stepping stone to a more established congregation. And this, I feel like, is really the practical point through which the book's thinking runs, because the idea is, you know, we go into places and we think, well, let's revitalize a church, but revitalize it for what? Revitalize it for what purpose and to what end? And as we look at, you know, why would I take these steps to revitalization, what we're really trying to say is the gospel needs to go forward in a fresh way in a small town. Sometimes the churches that we're in have enough age, enough status, enough kind of stability that they are established. And there's ways in which it could really be hard to overcome that. And sometimes we might be able to create a really good church for saved people, but it is much harder, especially in a rural environment, to say, what can I do that's actively going to reach people who don't know Jesus? And so honestly, the practical part of this book is really just this idea, and it's a question I would pose to any pastor revitalizing a church, is to say, what would it look like to build a church, a new form of church in your community that is intended to reach unsaved people? It involves looking at your town, seeing what the needs are, and really the possibilities are endless. People have started a church based off of prison ministry. They've started a church based off of recovery ministry. They've started a church based off of having dinner together. They've started a church that was, you know, based off meeting the needs of school workers in their community or county workers or whatever. The trick is that whatever route we're going to take, there are fresh expressions available to us that we as pastors should look at. Instead of going to community and thinking, well, I'm stuck doing church as usual, flip the script and say, God, what new thing could you be wanting to do in my community? And so he goes on in the book to really talk about maybe some of the ingredients of having it successful, right? Like, there's the idea. The idea is to have a fresh expression of church. But how is that going to be any different than a regular church? How is that going to do something new in a new place, you know? And what he talks about really is kind of the ingredients of a minister and an ingredients of a church leadership team that would help you do a new thing even in a tough environment. So one of the things he talks about, and I really love the illustration, but it highlights the need for like relationship, belonging, those kind of connections within a church body, right? We know that sometimes we go into small towns and the temptation is, and the way people sometimes feel, is that they are just a passive part of our story as a minister, as a leader, you know? Well, I'm just doing this so that I can build a church and know that I can build a church. And it's really no longer about the people of the church itself or the people of the community, but it's really about kind of getting what we can out of a situation, right? It's very transactional. And he tells a really entertaining story to talk about the importance of relationships. He talks about the sale of the Eiffel Tower, right? The Eiffel Tower in France. He talks about a con artist named Victor Lustig, who was the deputy director of the Ministry of Postal Services and Telecommunications in France. And it talks about how he sent this urgent message to all scrap metal companies in the area to meet him immediately. There was an elaborate meal full of wine, as you know, Lustig explains that the government needs to knock down the Eiffel Tower and scrap it. But it was a huge secret. Deal needed to be made that evening, right? And he starts the bidding process for this government contract, right? And so basically, these scrap metal companies say, wow, this is crazy. It's 1925. And this guy who's a foreign, you know, who's an official of their government says, you know, you need to win this bid for the Eiffel Tower. And he collects the money from these companies as a form of contract to say, you will pay us a little bit and then we will allow you to have this scrap metal job. You'll get paid a certain amount. But the thing is, his position was totally made up. This department wasn't even real. And it turns out that there was never a plan to scrap the Eiffel Tower. This man just took the money that the highest bidder gave him to win the contract and left town. And then he came back years later and did it again. And so you've got this crazy scenario. But the point of the author is, he says, what would drive a person to be so focused on making money that they'd be willing to like violate one of the core principles of relationship, that he'd be willing to come in and just scam innocent people out of their money, probably ruining some of their livelihoods in order to just make a buck. And the hard part of this part is that he then turns the attention to us as rural leaders. You know, maybe you're coming into a small town, maybe you've been in a small town for a while and you've tried your hardest to kind of build the church as you see fit. And he really issues this challenge. He said, hey, pastors, don't be so focused on meeting your own needs, on what you can get out of this situation, to forget that you are not here to get, you are here to give. And the rural church deserves people who just give, who say, I will belong to this place and love this place, not because, quote unquote, I am there to get anything out of it, but because this community and these people in this church deserves it. And so again, you're starting to see the heartbeat that would surround true revitalization in the rural church. He goes on to talk about what kind of church atmosphere you want to cultivate, right? He calls them forums of grace, where he invites small groups of believers to speak, to be heard, to take the bandages off their wounds. And it's a small quote, but that statement, forums of grace, creating a space to talk that is full of God's grace, is really what that means. And as a pastor is leading a church through revitalization, there comes a point where you have to address the wounds, right? You have to be able to take the bandages off and say, you know what, there is work to be done here and we've got to do it, right? And so forums of grace is a big deal. It's the idea that your congregation members, as you build a church where they can feel safe and that they can trust you, that you're actually helping them overcome some of the inevitable past trauma that comes from living in one place for a long time, that comes from this kind of tale of loss and struggle that is often the tale of rural communities. And then, so we begin these kind of discussions, and again, I'm skipping so many chapters, like there's so much to look into here. But he goes on from what kind of small groups you could have to revitalize well, what kind of spaces you could create, to even saying what kind of sermons would you preach. And I thought this was so interesting. He talked about how in an internet society that there's no shortage of good preaching. And he says, so what can we offer? We can't offer the best exegesis. We can't offer the best theological take. We can't offer even the best communication style or the best jokes. He said, but what we can offer is that the rural church has a unique place in society in which It allows community to flourish and belonging to flourish even when other environments cultivate isolation. So he talks about how your sermons can help people belong. And he gives kind of a comical example. You know, he says that rural church sermons don't always need to be, you know, designed for a live stream, right? Like, they don't need to be designed to reach a whole world. They can just be designed to be good for your church and your community. You know, even using a plethora of you know, local examples, saying, oh, Ethel here sitting on the front row is always yapping, or, you know, Bob over there always brings that one dish to the potluck, you know. And it's funny because he talks about the need for preaching that is localized, that allows people to feel like you're not in this to say, I want to build a big church. You're in this to say, I want to love this community well and make them part of my sermons, part of who I am, part of what's going on. Now, obviously, use this with discretion. You can't just randomly throw people into your sermons. But the point is, highly contextualized preaching is not designed for a broad appeal, but it's designed for just a particular place that we can then, you know, kind of uplift and support. So again, we're building a case through this of, like, what does it look like to revitalize a rural church? So we talk about how to have a fresh expression. We talk about the right heartbeat. We talk about creating good environments to talk to people, to begin to address their wounds, to craft sermons that are, again, not about reaching the airwaves, but just reaching the people in front of you, you know? But he also talks about another kind of conversation that often happens in revitalized churches, and it's the need to grieve, right? It's the need to understand that there was a church. And often, even, and don't misunderstand me, I'm not saying that there was a church, now there is a new church, and suddenly, you know, we've killed the old church. But oftentimes, if you're going to revitalize a church, really what you are saying is the church is old in some ways, and it needs to be new. And even if you're in the same building with the same people, there's still a process of letting go of what was and being ready to explore what is. And so, in addition to these forums of grace, he advises the pastor and the leadership team to say, we need to give place for people to grieve. Before the church can grow, the church has to grieve the inevitable loss of what the church was in order to grow closer to Jesus, in order to grow in numbers, in order to reach new people that are unsaved. There is this sense of growth, right? And so, again, putting this picture together, and I recognize that in a review like this, we're doing a lot of flyover. And I recognize with you that there'd be a lot deeper we could go on these conversations. But my goal is twofold. Number one, it's to give you a few nuggets to chew on. And so we'll kind of reflect and wrap up with a few questions what we've covered here. But also, it's to encourage you to buy this book. You know, I don't need to necessarily write 10 chapters on it because the author did that himself. And so, so in summary, here's what I love about this book. Number one, I feel like it presented itself in a way that honored rural context. I feel like this book truly understands what it means to be in rural, all the good parts and the hard parts, the history and the community and all those things. Number two, I feel like this book is inherently accessible and practical. It's got field exercises that you could go through right now, unedited, with your leadership team. It's got stories from people who are living the rural life. It's got again, these kind of pragmatic thoughts that are designed just to help you and your team flourish. And I respect that so much. It's also only 130 pages. Again, not very long. In addition to that, it paints for us a picture of revitalization, right? I know I mentioned it right away, but the title of the book is Fresh Expressions. And my challenge to you as a rural leader is your church reaching unsaved people? And if it's not, then what can we do to breathe new life into church? Maybe that means changing something about our Sunday service, but maybe it means saying, God, what form of church outside the walls should I be doing? And again, I want to be very clear. I'm not saying, should you do church outside the walls? I'm saying, what form of church should you be doing outside the walls? I feel like to reach people, even if you've lived there a long time or you're just coming into rural, we have to get outside of our spaces and say, what are we doing to reach people in our community? Because again, unsaved people are not necessarily drawn by the same things that church people are. And we need to acknowledge that. I think that he talks a lot about what kind of environment the pastor should cultivate. And I think several questions come to mind. Number one, if you're new to a rural context, are you coming in guns blazing with fresh ideas and so gung-ho about the future that you forget to pause and get to know the people, right? We talk about that whole scheme of selling the Eiffel Tower, right? You cannot just walk into a rural place and be transactional. You cannot just say, well, here's what I'm going to get out of this interaction. You have to be there for the people and on their behalf. You have to really belong and seek to belong. And that involves getting down in the weeds with people's wounds. You know, I think many a pastor has been frustrated and burnt out by a lack of progress in their stubborn small town church. And yet, there are so many steps to this journey. You have to walk with people through their wounds. Maybe other pastors have left. Maybe the main businesses in the town died. Hear the stories and weep with these people. In addition to that, you have to recognize that whatever new version of church you're trying to lead people into, it will inevitably result in the current form of church shrinking or even dying. And that's something that people have to be allowed to grieve. As much as it might be counterintuitive, as much as we might say, let's hurry up and get on with it, you know, we're going from church to church, like this is all God, this is all gospel, we still have to give people the right to mourn for what is and what they love. Because they are part of the body of Christ, and what they're mourning is maybe a death of what they perceive to be what, you know, the work that God did there through the decades. And as you revitalize a church, bring it to a new season, a new chapter, we have to honor both the pain and the progress of the past. And then finally, just overall, I think our attitude should be that whether you've lived in a rural place for a small amount of time or a long amount of time, we should always be looking for a fresh expression of the gospel. Maybe it means that we scrap a lot of our current programs and say, you know, we've been doing this for years and years and it's not really working. Let's do something new, right? Maybe you're coming to a place for the first time and you say, let's do something new. But the importance cannot be understated is that in a rural church setting, the pull of lethargy and complacency is very real. The pull towards good enough and this is how we've always done it is very real. But we cannot just run in like a bull in a china shop. We have to walk in with grace. We have to walk in with excitement. And we have to walk in knowing that however long of time it takes, we're going to pull people with us into a fresh expression of the gospel. So I encourage you to check out this book. There'll be a link in the show notes, Fresh Expressions of the Rural Church by Michael Adam Beck and Tyler Kleeberger. We are going to be back on our next episode. We're going to be back next time, returning to our interview format. I'm excited for the interview we've got coming. You won't want to miss out. I think it's just going to be a great time. But for this week, I just want to emphasize again that this is Rural Advancement, right? We exist to empower, to equip, to encourage those of you who are serving in small, out-of-the-way places. We are excited. We want you to know that you are seen, that you are valued, and that what you are doing matters to the kingdom of God. You can always find us everywhere that podcasts are, you know, really Spotify, Apple Podcasts, ruraladvancement.com. We are always encouraged. If you want to reach out to the show, you can definitely find an email address in the show notes. But for this week, I have been your host, Joe Epley, and we will see you next time on Rural Advancement.